safely deliver and control software with LaunchDarkly. Our FedRAMP authorized platform allows agencies to standardize fast, fearless software releases across programs, accelerate digital transformation, improve site reliability, resolve cyber incidents in less time with less stress, and reduce risk when migrating to the cloud. Visit LaunchDarkly.com to see how LaunchDarkly's feature management platform can impact software delivery at your agency. That's LaunchDarkly.com.
Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by LaunchDarkly. Here's today's moderator, Tom Tamman.
The National Science Foundation is growing thanks in part to money from the CHIPS and Science Act. It's adding new programs and new people, and it's continually updating information technology to support all of this activity. I got an update from Chief Information Officer Dorothy Aronson. Let's begin with that combination of titles. You are the CIO becoming the data officer. That sounds like a pretty exciting switch.
I'm inspired. For many years, I worked in the IT area, and I've seen IT through its whole evolution from the time when people didn't use ATMs for funds transfer, and networking was something you did over the phone or under the floor, and now it's come all the way to this fabulous place, and now I'm jumping on the bandwagon with data. And I really look forward to moving data forward and getting it into everyone's hands in the same way that technology is now available to everyone.
All right. Well, we'll probably talk more about data, but I wanted to get to the subject of modernization at the NSF, IT modernization, something you've been involved with. And especially as the agency is growing, it's got much expanded funding because of a couple of the recent laws like the CHIPS Act, and therefore more programs, more grant programs, more science programs. So tell us about the modernization that was already going on and how maybe this expansion might affect it.
For many years, our philosophy in the IT organization has been one of continuous modernization with smooth, reliable operations, and on top of that, innovation. So there's three layers of things going on: keeping things going, keeping renewing things as they age, because in the IT industry, they age very quickly, and then also innovating at the same time. And so what we've seen happening recently is that with the advent of moving applications into either mature applications, moving them to cloud hosting, or implementing new applications using low-code and no-code solutions, we see a real explosion of smaller applications that are tied together only by virtue of sharing data. So that has allowed us to grow very quickly. And finally, on the innovation front, NSF is staffed by a lot of energetic, creative, future-thinking people. Many of them have ideas of their own for innovation. And so we've created an entire organization that brings the local innovators together and their inventions together so that they can be shared across the foundation. And that's also expedited innovation for us.
All right. So there's a lot going on. And I wanted to ask you about that idea of the low code, no code. I think of that in terms of redoing existing legacy applications and as a way of preserving the logic in them and replacing them with fresh code, which is generated by the low-code platform. Is that distinguished from brand new applications that might be developed in a kind of pipeline or SecDevOps operation? Or
that's really interesting. So in our experience, the people that are picking up on the low-code, you're right that some are moving legacy capabilities to low-code solutions, in which case they become more, in my experience, they become more standardized, because a low-code solution will come with its own characteristics. Whereas I think that our main business applications, our central applications, are primarily still coded in the more basic coding methodologies. So with DevSecOps and agile development, as opposed to the rapid implementation that you see with when plugging in a component from low code. So what we're seeing with, if you take something specific like and simple like robotic process automation, we're using that. We initially used that to tie systems together that were not automatically joined. So an end user who sees that every time you invite a guest to a meeting, you also send an email can create an automation that will be triggered every time you invite someone, an email will be generated automatically. So it's those kinds of connections that robotic process automation allows. And it, again, it's at the point of the end user as opposed to the main proposal submission and review processes.
Right. So by going to that kind of integrated view via the low code, in some ways you're creating new functions out of old systems.
Exactly. We're reducing we have people reducing their own manual repetitive work with robotic process automation using those tools. And it's amazing and really exciting to see the breadth of people who didn't think of themselves as IT people who are able to look at their own desk and say, how do I make things better here? And then go off on their own and make, with some help from coders, but mostly on their own, to make solutions happen.
Yeah, so it really becomes a group activity driven in large part by users that know what the heck they need to get their jobs done.
Exactly. And think about how much savings that is for the translation between the end user and the coder, so that things aren't lost in translation because it's actually the end user who's solving their own problem. The other thing we see a lot of is that we have implemented a way of sharing those inventions. We have put together a, let's call it a bookshelf or a repository called Hopper, named after
Grace.
Grace, thank you, Grace Hopper, because she was a, you know, she was an innovative IT person. So we have this place where people can put their inventions and share them with each other and improve upon each other's work or comment upon each other's work. And that's become a wonderful environment for innovators.
And when you result, say, in a new functionality, new component, new feature that is going to be deployed widely, such as we used a simple example of an email generated along with a meeting request, this type of thing, I imagine it can get a little bit more elaborate than that. Do you have a, what's your rollout testing, ensuring that it works in all situations strategy? Because if you send it to all, 10,000 people or whatever it is.
Yeah, right. We have this methodology, this modernization. It's like an evolutionary progression where products start in what you might call the lab, where one person's using it and developing it. And within Hopper, and then you can mature to being on the network, to being an innovation, to being novice, and then mature, and then integrated. And so those steps are all accompanied with lots of checks, checks and balances. So if something comes into our environment from that direction, which is really hard to get all the way from the lab into integrated. Integrated means that the main legacy system has absorbed that logic, and that takes the cooperation with the central IT shop and prioritization and official going through our official DevSecOps process. But a product can be mature, which means it's approved by our policy office, it's approved by our security office, and sitting in Hopper in the mature state and used by as many people as who choose to go and use that product.
So there is a phasing to it.
Absolutely.
Because
yes.
At the enterprise level, you still run into the ATO requirement. I mean, there are
of course.
Gates
yes.
and stuff.
And at the mature level, which is also hard to obtain, you have to have more than one developer willing to sustain it. So that if the person who created the original product decides to move to a different part of the organization or whatever, then others can still leverage that product.
And do you ever find that there are unforeseen, conflicts, data calls, a thousand things can cause an
yep.
application to hang up at that early
yes.
phase stage such that you can pull it back and maybe rework it a little bit?
Right. What happens is that the innovators are often very proud of their products. And so every other Friday we have meetings where they show them off, showcases. And during those discussions, people throw rocks at each other's work, they make improvements and so, or suggested improvements, but throwing rocks is actually not what they do. They love each other's stuff in general, but they will find flaws where they will say, well, we don't do it that way in our organization or whatnot. So there are many, many things can go wrong. We do require, we have under development now a policy that tells people that if you're using data, you have to use identify a certain data source. So there's many rules about how the best practices associated with this kind of development, we call them mostly guardrails as opposed to policies, because we don't want to deter people from trying. And so the rules get tighter as the product becomes more mature.
Sure. For example, a guardrail might be you want to make sure people use certain volumes out of a library of utilities such that you have consistency across the board for the different parts of an application.
That makes sense. Primarily, we focus on the data guardrails and the tools guardrails. So like we want people to develop with tools, basic tools that are approved for the network use.
And on the data side, some of the guardrails ensure
that you don't expose NSF data inappropriately outside of the agency when that occurs, or abuse PII. Those kinds of rules are very important.
Interesting. Yeah. So, and in that whole phasing of the deployment of a new feature or new application or combined application, between the beta testers and the hopper people looking at each other and, you know, testing one another, do you have like a limited group of people that are maybe not quite as far back in the cycle as beta, but not that is a test group that you can try that's what you think is the finished phase?
So in the innovation side of the house, the testers are really the peers of the people and the customers of the people that are developing the solutions. We don't have a separate test group for that. Now, for the central IT, the central systems, the primary systems that are supported and used agency-wide, we have a much more elaborate and dedicated testing process. Of course, we do use that, which does involve very heavily, does involve customers of various types. So we've just recently at NSF made a huge change, which was that we are sort of famous for using a system that was deployed, I believe, in 1994 called Fastlane. And that is where people are used to submitting proposals, which are ideas for consideration for funding. And just in January, we moved that proposal submission capability from Fastlane and retired it from Fastlane, and now do that using a tool called research.gov, which is much more modern and has more capability. That transition was done over a period of time, gradually testing various components and parts of the process. And it has happened so gradually, in fact, that customers almost are, you know, they're celebrating the victory of the move, but they're not complaining about not being able to use the system. You know, so we've captured a rhythm, and we have a huge customer outreach campaign every time we do that. And the testing is extremely thorough. So we're not releasing buggy software that we have to, you know, pull back. And so it's taken years of development to get to a place where we have this process that is so beautiful and elegant that we're able to seamlessly release software and even huge changes like that one.
Dorothy Aronson is Chief Information Officer of the National Science Foundation. We'll return with more of the interview after the short break here on Federal News Network. I'm Tom Temin.
Safely deliver and control software with LaunchDarkly. Our FedRAMP authorized platform allows agencies to standardize fast, fearless software releases across programs, accelerate digital transformation, improve site reliability, resolve cyber incidents in less time with less stress, and reduce risk when migrating to the cloud. Visit LaunchDarkly.com to see how LaunchDarkly's feature management platform can impact software delivery at your agency. That's LaunchDarkly.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Dorothy Aronson, the Chief Information Officer of the National Science Foundation. Our topic is IT modernization and deploying new applications and features. And let's talk for a minute about something I mentioned earlier, and I want to clarify. Do you have separate processes or separate people doing the low-code work?
Yes.
Versus those doing original coding in a SecDevOps type of pipeline?
Yes.
With whatever development we tools
have,
they do.
Exactly. We have federal leads and we have contract support staff. And the primarily, I would say, the federal leads who lead low code and innovation are separate from those that are focusing on the primary business function, the core business function. I'm not sure that that will always be true. I think that, again, the IT world, I think, is moving more and more into this world where the coding is really done once by the developer in the low-code world, and that more and more of the solutions will be coming from customers. And so I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but I really do see, and this is partly why I'm so excited about data, because I think data is still in the primitive stages, where people are still struggling to get to a place like where we are with IT now.
Sure. And just kind of a deep in the weeds question, people call these plans low code, no code. What it means is that a machine is generating code, because no computer runs without code. It's just
right.
offset as to who types in the code, if you will, to put it primitively.
And right, so once exactly. So the languages are very much more accessible to humans without extensive training.
And once you have completed a project with low code, no code, say in a year, it's time to revisit. Do you go back to the low code, no code platform, or do you go back to the code that is actually runtime that tool originally generated?
Oh, no, it's interesting that you use the period of time a year. I would say that you definitely go back to the low code solution. You also, during that period, depending on the size of the solution you've implemented, if it's tiny and you created it with low code and now it's part of the main system, the low code solution isn't necessarily required anymore, in theory. But in practice, a lot of times these platforms change frequently enough that you put it in 1 year, you go to enhance it, you use a whole different tool, 2 years later. But they're also continuously changing. And you talked about how NSF's business process is changing. It can only change quickly if the solutions are built quickly. But building them quickly the first time doesn't mean that that's their destination technology platform.
Sure. And this is a good time maybe to talk about some other samples. Give us some examples of the types of projects that are going on with however coding mechanism you might use.
Sure. So, for example, the new technology office called TIP, and it's more than a technology office. The new strategy or a approach at NSF is to build external partnerships and to help to improve our ability to move from lab to market more quickly. And that requires a lot of an emphasis on developing partnerships. Well, partnerships weren't an original part of our central systems, but people in one organization would like to be able to identify established partnerships in other organizations. So in order to leverage and share that data, we need a partnership repository. And rather than each person keeping their own Rolodex of information about partnerships. So the TIP office, rather than central IT, the TIP office itself is spearheading an effort to collect this partnership data. And they're using they've considered a variety of products, and it looks to me like they're going to go with a relatively, low-code solution that may eventually go to even a more grandiose low-code solution. So they're starting with a primitive low-code solution where it's like half development, half low-code, and they're moving possibly towards a larger and more long-term sustainable low-code solution. So all of these things are happening really focused from the program office as opposed to from the central IT organization.
And this functionality will eventually become part of the basic business platform, though, that pervades the NSF?
Yes. And it will even from the beginning possibly share data. So the place where things are shared is really in the data. And that's the important thing, because it's actually the partnership data that's important to people. So in addition to the systems that capture information, like the ones we're describing are transactional business systems that capture information, there's also an enterprise data warehouse and a data lake where this data is commingled. So from most people's perspective, whether or not, however this information is captured, they're seeing it together, or they are able to see it together in a single view.
And how does the cloud affect all of this? Because as the host, the cloud has services and requirements of its own.
Yeah, the cloud has definitely been instrumental in allowing us to quickly expand. just the fact that at one point in time, we were all dependent on how quickly a server could be procured and configured and established in a data center. Now all of that is gone. With most low code solutions, you get the storage capacity. You can buy the storage and the infrastructure along with the solution, and you don't give it a second thought. It's part of the deal. So all of this has allowed tremendous, much more rapid expansion and experimentation as well. So you don't have to plan to experiment. You just go out and experiment.
Sure. So, and my other question had to do with mobile, because so many people, especially with the hybrid workforce, and I know NSF has become as hybrid as anybody and found that it works. We're speaking to you from your home today. So what about mobile? Is that a factor?
We do have a couple of mobile apps. Well, first, if we're talking about mobile as far as what do you put on your phone, you know, the kinds of things you put on your phone. So far, our experience in deploying apps has been limited. But if you're thinking about mobile as far as a mobile device, like an iPad or a laptop, all of this works in those environments. The phones, the one app that we really have that I'm very proud of, NSF by the Numbers, is publicly available. And that is an app that's built on all of this systems data that we've been describing.
But at this point, employees doing the enterprise work of the NSF, you still need a computer to do that even remotely.
Yes, except you do. You need a computer unless what you're working on, like we are doing today, if your work can be handled through products like Teams or SharePoint, a lot of that is mobile by design.
It sounds like, though, in your new role as the chief data officer, that you're going to still have a lot of collaboration with whoever becomes the CIO because of this close association between new product development and the data required for it.
Right. So the beauty about being a data person is data people have to be friends with everyone. You have to get along with the IT people. You have to get along with the customers and understand where they're coming from. And I look at data as I look forward to the time when everyone has a data acumen that they're proud of, that they are aware of and proud of. And so data is every man, woman, and child, you know, will be empowered by data. IT is baked into many data solutions. So a lot of the people that are expert at working with data are using more primitive programming languages to extract and make sense of that information. And also we're moving in the data area, we're focusing a lot on artificial intelligence, and those kinds of technologies are really exploding and fascinating.
Dorothy Aronson is Chief Information Officer of the National Science Foundation. To hear this interview in its entirety or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Launch Darkly on Federal News Network.
Safely deliver and control software with Launch Darkly. Our FedRAMP authorized platform allows agencies to standardize fast, fearless software releases across programs. Accelerate digital transformation, improve site reliability, resolve cyber incidents in less time with less stress, and reduce risk when migrating to the cloud. Visit launchdarkly.com to see how Launch Darkly's feature management platform can impact software delivery at your agency. That's LaunchDarkly.com.